thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Online.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. Webcasting live from the Allstate Skyline Studio. This is John Williams. We're here until 3 o'clock. That's weekdays 1 to 3. And on Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, White Sox baseball on WGN Radio, AM 720. And right now we are doing a full show for you at WGNRadio.com. Thank you for listening. Tell your friends. They're WGN Radio. Bill and Wendy, John Williams, Steve Bertrand fans, Rokan fans. Tell them, hey, if the game's on, you can hear us in our entirety as we now broadcast on the web. So the usual show today. Phil Vitale, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, will stop by and say hello. We'll talk about a restaurant or two that he is interested in. There's three things I want to throw at Phil, though, and I'll throw one of them at you guys to start. And that is, when Phil comes in with a restaurant review or two for us, I'm going to mention to him that I walked over yesterday to Gibson's Italia, the new Gibson's Italian restaurant / steakhouse, which is right on the river, and somebody had told me about it. Phil had also reviewed it. And the review I heard from a friend, an acquaintance, was so good, I thought, I'm just going to walk over there and see. So I went and saw it, and I've got a few things to say about that. Brenda and I had breakfast the other day at Ann Sather. When's the last time you went to Ann Sather's for a breakfast? Those cinnamon rolls are so good. Do you go there, V? Have you ever been to Ann Sather's before?
Yeah, I love their hot chocolate during the winter. They put, like, marshmallows and cream, or it's so good.
And we also went to the old Rock and Roll McDonald's today, because they've recently changed that from a Rock and Roll McDonald's to an Apple store, and they have little pods where food comes out, and it's the saddest thing you'll ever see.
We're going to have to drag you kicking and screaming, is that it? You seem to be a little down
today. Get him a happy meal.
Yeah, you need a happy meal.
We'd heard about that, and so we said, hey, let's go over and see the new McDonald's. Everybody's talking about this new space age. This is the future. Steve, what's the story that McDonald's is spending more than $300 million to modernize more than 400 restaurants just in Illinois alone?
Correct.
$300 million
right.
to up to 400 restaurants, so that's about $1 million a restaurant, in Illinois alone. So we went over to the one that they've, and I don't know that they're all going to look like this, but it just took the life out of me when I walked in there.
That exciting?
I don't know what a restaurant is supposed to look like, but it would seem to me that it would be carbon-based, that there would be life, that there would be familiar forms or faces. You know how, like, on 2001 A Space Odyssey or futuristic movies of days gone by, when they imagined what the world would be like for us and a little door would open up and a little food unit would come out and you would eat this? That's what it felt like.
I never saw those movies, but I did see The Jetsons.
Kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
It felt very conveyor beltish.
Well, here we are. We're in the future. They were right.
Doesn't make it good. So when you walk in, it's a glass and steel structure, and it's got some modern touches, some pretty natural colored wood, and there's a wall of green plants that are somehow growing vertically, and so that's interesting to look at, but really you're there to get a sandwich. And when you walk in, you immediately are ushered down a corridor of kiosks, like almost ATMs, you know, boop, boop, like at the airport when you're getting your own ticket or transfer to print out, one of those things. So you're there, and you walk through a corridor of these things, and I just threw my hands up. I said, that's it, I'm out.
Yeah, I think he called it like jail, because it's got some fencing.
And then it does have some sort of black painted metal work around it. And it really felt like a nice prison, maybe minimum security, but I wasn't comfortable with the feel of that thing.
So you missed the pleasant give and take, the exchange you have typically with a McDonald's employee at the counter?
Well,
yeah, as a matter of fact, yes.
Really?
So he skipped right past those kiosks and actually found a human to speak to.
Well, that's what Griff said. He goes, Griffin, Violetta, and I went. And so Griffin says, well, you don't have to do this. They have lines up there. As if you're pining for a line, go stand in the line and there'll be somebody to take your order. And I said,
you can wear old frontier clothes. I'm sorry.
when we were examining the kiosks, you know, and I'm like, this is so weird to order food that way. And I've been to airports. I know how these things work. In fact, you can order food from a kiosk-like device or a pad. They'll give you a little, like, iPad at some of the restaurants at airports now. It's weird because the guy that would take your order is standing right there while you're trying to page. You want a hamburger, right? And you're paging through menu options on the thing. But if you just said to that guy, hamburger, he would get you a hamburger. But no, we're not doing that. That's too easy. So you got to figure out how to work this computer gadget. So there is a person, though, walking around going, hey, can I help you figure out how to work the kiosk? So they're training us all to input our own orders. You'll see this at banks and places like that, too. So I said, no, thank you. I'll just go talk to the human beings up front. And then we ordered our food. I mean, this isn't a review of the food at McDonald's. It was the typical McDonald's food. Violetta had a sandwich larger than her head. It's called a Big Mac. I got the hamburger and fries and Coke.
Yeah, hamburger, no cheese on it. I'm with Wendy. Super weird to not get a cheeseburger.
And then the food came out, and they handed it to us. But it just seems so impersonal. That's the thing. It just seems so impersonal. I was at the bank the other day, just talking to some people, feeding the pigeons from a bag that
I had. Did you get a balance check, or what were you doing there?
All right, I'll stop.
Wanted a free pen?
You wanted the free coffee, didn't you? Just here to check how much I have in my account again.
Still got my money?
Is Lois in?
Hey, are those gumdrops for free?
So I know I need to stop being this guy.
I think I can finally weigh in.
Yes, you are. Griff had a microphone issue, but his microphone is working now, and he's been patiently listening to all of this nonsense. Do you care to say anything?
You said it took the life out of you?
Yeah, I did.
That seems, well, here you are.
Okay. All right, I exaggerate.
Sarah Sanders.
Maybe you were just hungry.
No, it wasn't that. And, you know, like I said, this isn't about the food, because I could tell you that they got our orders kind of wrong. And
when was the last time you went to the...
Wait. What? The people got your orders wrong?
I got a quarter pounder instead of my Big Mac at first.
And these
I
are
got
from
a,
people.
I got a Diet Coke instead of a Coke, and they didn't give me my
you
fries.
Guys, what are you doing?
On our three orders, they made three errors.
We walked in. You said you saw the kiosks where you type in your order at first, and
now,
very clearly behind all of them is a person behind the counter also taking orders. And you, like, your shoulders slumped, and you looked around like, well, what... And then a person came up and said, do you need help with the kiosks? And we were, I think we were waiting for Violetta at that point. You were outside taking pictures. So a human did approach you, too, and offered assistance with the new technology.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, no, we're just waiting. It's fine. But very, very helpful, very friendly, came to you.
A nice person.
No kidding, John. I like McDonald's. I don't go very often, but when I go, it's fine. It serves its purpose and
exactly.
All that stuff.
That's where I am.
I never would miss the interaction I have with the person taking my order. I mean, that's not the part of the McDonald's experience that I think is of highest value.
Well, for one thing, it's a job for somebody. So I want those people to have those jobs. And I'm really sorry that they got the order wrong, because I'm going to bat for them on this. But that happens. And, it really is.
Three out of four times, was it?
Is there that much of a difference between one item on a McDonald's menu and the other? It's kind of like three foodstuffs, potato, bread, meat. Most McDonald's things are one of those.
Well, and the thing is, she might have messed it up because you were talking to her the whole time. Like, we were wondering, is there an upstairs? Is there a patio? When are you going to open up the rooftop? None of those things exist, actually. But
we were kind of group interviewing the lady taking our order. But by the way, the lady taking our order agreed. She was delightful.
Very delightful.
Really a nice, pleasant, positive person. What a great gal she was.
So too bad she lost her job after bosses were listening on the stream today.
I mentioned that it felt like an Apple store. It was a wannabe Apple store.
Yeah, just talk a little bit about it, Griffin. That was my experience.
Glass walls, a cleaner finish, sort of modern design.
Wide open space.
Yeah, high ceiling, very high ceiling. Because it used to be two levels, and now it's just one level with a high ceiling.
Nary a snot-filled ball jump area where you can send the kids to jump up and down.
Is that what you were missing?
Well, it just, and I think maybe that's what just took me aback at first, was the newness of it, right? And you're absolutely right. Imagine imagine if instead of when you went to the Apple store, instead of them selling you iPads or iPhones, they were selling you hamburgers and fries. It had that feel.
It wanted to have that feel. It wasn't quite there.
Well, it's always going to be McDonald's. I mean, it's always going to be selling you hamburgers. I mean, don't you? I mean, you're the one that brought that analogy up, and I think that works.
But an Apple store definitely has a lot of hustle to it, almost overactive, where you're like, I don't know where I'm supposed to stand. There's too many people moving around, know way more than me about this phone.
I don't like going there.
So I think it was definitely more relaxed version of the Apple store, but I wonder if that's just because that's design of the future, right? I mean, I don't know.
But what this whole conversation is ultimately about, the banks, the airports, the kiosks at McDonald's, if I thought about it longer, I'd come up with other examples, is this sort of depersonalization of a retail experience. And
But that's how McDonald's started in the first place. It was the first place where you would get your food and go. Right? I mean, I know this from the hamburger documentary that I saw on it, but it was, to them, it was crazy that you wouldn't get your food, sit down, and wait for it.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So, I mean, they started this process a long time ago.
They've been on the cutting edge of the food delivery.
Right. Do you find it painful every time you see a drive through? I find that's far more impersonal than doing the kiosk and then going to pick up.
Well, I don't want
to
make... You know, Griffin, you know what makes me sad is when I'm driving and my gas tank gets toward E, and then I get out and, well, I fill it up myself. I miss the boys who used to come out and put the gas
in. Yeah, they don't even know that. They have no idea that you used to sit there and wait for somebody to come in and pump your gas.
The world as we knew it ended back in 1972.
You never left your car. Okay, Steve, maybe this is like that. Maybe this is like that. I don't know that it is, though. You're getting gas in your car versus you're getting a sandwich.
Food in your engine.
And fries.
It's all fuel, baby.
But would you have preferred like a throwback McDonald's then, or what other design if they didn't want the rock and roll?
I was afraid it was going to come around to this because I don't know what a new McDonald's is supposed to look like.
Well, they should get the food right.
John goes, they're new. I'm like, well, they're not new at doing food.
It's just
a new space.
No, but when you look back in that little, you know, when you look at the food prep area for a McDonald's, does that look like a place you want to spend a lot of time? And these people are sweating and they're, you know, doing stuff. And I don't know how trained, educated, or motivated they are, but I know that doesn't look like a fun job to me. So when these people don't get it right, I'm like, ah, hell,
I think your concerns sound very slippery slope is where you're coming from. Like, because I don't think at that McDonald's any jobs have been lost because of those kiosks, at least not yet.
Yeah.
There's still people waiting at the counter. Those counters weren't any bigger before the kiosks got put in.
Okay, but they only have two registers. Did you notice that?
When we were there.
Okay.
I think they might open up another register if it gets busier, but I don't think that space is any smaller than it would have been.
I'll concede
that. But you're
just
worried about the future if we go down further down this path.
I guess so, but really.
When we get there.
You know, but you, Griff, I was describing a scene when you were talking to one of the engineers about how in the futuristic movies like 2001 A Space Odyssey or Pick'em, an episode of The Jetsons, a food unit comes out of a cubicle. You don't know how it got there. You don't know what's on the other side of that wall, but it's just, here's your food, eat your food, sit here. That's kind of the experience I think they're giving me. And I want my experience to be warmer. I want it to be a little more.
I found it. As someone who went to the rock and roll, quote unquote, rock and roll McDonald's, it hasn't been a real rock and roll McDonald's for a long time. I don't think we are also talking about that. But I've been to that McDonald's before it closed down and renovated. And it was, I liked it better this time because it was like natural light, open. There was the green, they had a lot of plants and like a tree and a sort of glass case in the middle.
On the second floor, just, you know, kind of up there.
I mean, I grant that it feels ridiculous because you're in a McDonald's, but I didn't hate looking. I liked looking at it. Yeah. And it was kind of gross in there before.
Yeah, well, I believe that about that McDonald's, but that doesn't change what I feel about this McDonald's. But okay, fair enough. I'll concede the point that I'm the outsider on this one. I'm put it this way, Griff. 1 to 100, what's your vibe for that experience you had at McDonald's today, taking in the food experience, the environmental experience, and the human interaction?
Well, there was this man moping around me the whole time, so that brought it down maybe 20 points. But
sort of an energy suck.
1 to 100.
I give it an 80.
80. Fioletta, what was your vibe for the McDonald's experience today?
It was good, but just can I also mention really quick, we sat down and he picked up a straw and goes, so this is the worst. This is a paper-wrapped plastic straw. I was like, oh. I was two bites into my Big Mac. I'm like, all right.
I shouldn't go down the road of recyclables and straws, but yeah, we did have to notice the straw. 1 to 100, Violetta, what was your McDonald's experience?
65.
Okay. Mine was a 29, but that's just where we are.
I guess where I'm coming from is I don't know what you're reminiscing, truly. Like, what is... I'm just kind of lost as to what you think you didn't get out of this experience that you would.
That's kind of where I'm, Griffin. I don't quite get what...
You know, it does feel like an airport McDonald's.
I'm genuinely not trying to be argumentative. I just don't know.
I know that, and shame on me that I'm not better articulating what it is that I want. But I don't think I have to. I don't think it's my job to know what a McDonald's is supposed to be like. It's sort of like when you say, poverty, what's the solution? I don't know, but I do know this is not right. Okay. That's an extreme example, but we often paint ourselves into those argumentative corners. So they say, okay, well, what are you going to do about poverty? And the guy goes, I don't know, but that doesn't mean that my observation about this particular issue isn't valid. Similarly, in the case of the McDonald's that feels plastic and glass and futuristic and artificial to me, I'm not sure what the 2018 McDonald's is supposed to look and feel like. I'm just telling you, I wasn't pleased with my experience there as a result of the environment.
I think you went in...
with a prejudged attitude?
I think you were ready to be displeased.
I completely was. That is quite true. I'll give you that. So I'm not maybe being fair. But if there's a voice out there, if there's a person out there that hears this voice and can sympathize with and relate to what I'm going through, you can call right now. I don't know what the phone number is. Because you can text to 3... Is it 981-7200? Are we using... Because remember the last time...
Text that.
Wendy gave me a wrong phone number last time. But it's 312-981-7200, right? You're able to answer that phone number, Griff? 312-981-7200? Because that's different than the phone numbers I see on the screen. Okay. All right. Text to 312-981-7200, if nothing else. Or call. Maybe somebody will answer and you could talk to them. It'll be like you visiting with a human being. Back in a minute. Really, your call is very important to us. Please stand by. Oh, now we do have the right screen in front of us. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number to call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number to call if you want to be part of this online broadcast. Yeah, White Sox are on WGN Radio. This is WGNRadio.com. I'm John Williams. Producer Griffin is here. Violette is too. Steve Bertrand's in the WGN Radio newsroom. He's ready to say hello in a little bit, or that is to do the news in a little bit. You know, the promo for the show today was this Trump Omarosa thing really wasn't a big deal, and then it sort of became a big deal, didn't it? I at first thought, okay, that was like the latest flashpoint. It's one of those things I always argue is not important, but we latch onto it because Trump said or tweeted something outlandish. And, you know, then it's... you're attracted to it, but then it sort of goes away because it really isn't that important and something else is coming along. And I feel that's been the arc of the Omarosa story. So it caught our attention. Then you sort of get your wits about you and you go, she's a not credible person who has an outlandish book out. And she's never, you know, she's always been a disruptor. So she and her story can go away now. But I think the way the White House has handled it is actually elevating it to another level, that it now is becoming a thing, not because of what Omarosa wrote or said or did, but because of the way the White House is handling it. That is, when the president called her a dog, and Sarah Sanders yesterday stood by that. You know, forget about this whole N-word thing. We don't know. We don't need to know. That doesn't matter. But the way they're handling it, I think, does. And I know that the N-word matters, but I'm not even talking about that right now. I'm just saying that I think the way they're handling it has made it an issue that it was not ever going to be. When the president of the United States calls a member of his member of his staff, or any U.S. citizen, a dog. And, you know, people are having conversations today about, well, was that a sexist comment or was that a racist comment? I did not at first think of it in racist terms, even sexist terms. I just thought it's just so unpresidential and unfortunate. The news click at WGNRadio.com asked you if this matters, if Omarosa matters. And you were kind of divided. A little more than half of you said, she/it doesn't, and a little more than half of you said maybe or it does. But I think the longer this thing goes right now, the more legs, if you will, it gets. And that's too bad, too. That's too bad, too. We do have a new news click at WGNRadio.com, an issue that isn't like this at all. And that is, there's the story of a malnourished horse in San Francisco, or it was the San Francisco Chronicle that was reporting it. I'll talk more about this after the news. But the owner was neglecting it. And so on behalf of the horse, some people got involved, and the horse is suing the owner. So the news click question becomes, should an animal have the right to sue its owner for neglect? You know, like when they'll find a house with 57 cats or 22 dogs, should on behalf of those animals somebody be able to sue the owner? Literally, seek damages. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's our news click at WGNRadio.com. WGNRadio.com. And you'll find a news click there. We'll post it on my Facebook page, too. We've been very busy on social media today, on Instagram, on Twitter, and on Facebook. We've posted two suits that I'm considering wearing for the Thomas Jefferson Show, the gray plaid, the blue with the red, white, and blue kerchief. There's two options there. I'm not kidding. I do want your help on this.
Don't go obvious.
I know. Yeah. Kind of am, though. I can see Bertrand, John Williams, in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're 18 stories above the Chicago River. Immediately below us, they're shooting a TV show today. We've been watching them shoot it on the Columbus Avenue Bridge, and now they've moved over to Upper Wacker, and we're watching 50 people, painstakingly position people and cars and cameras and things. V, it's not where you are now. It's down. I don't know if you can see what I see because you're in a different part of the building. But what we have watched them do all morning long is shoot what will probably amount to 15 seconds of a TV show. I think it's Chicago Fire because I saw somebody with a Chicago Fire t-shirt on. But it's pretty amazing how...
They're really good walkers.
Oh, my God. How many people and how much work and how much, evidently, money it takes for... the shortest of things to be set and done on a TV show or a movie. They're shooting something downtown. Phil Vitale, who is the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, is in our studio here. He joins us on Wednesdays about this time to talk a little bit about the restaurant scene. And Phil's now just putting his headphones on. Can you hear us, Phil, over there?
I can.
Nice to see you, my friend.
Thank you.
Before we go to you, you know you work with my producer, Violetta Padre.
Mm-hmm.
Violetta Padromedic, and I'm looking at Violetta. Elif Garris, our producer,
yes.
is out of town.
Way out of town, I understand.
She just called in. So let's just say hello to her because it's not only long distance, but it's a. What time is it there? Where are you there, Elif?
Istanbul. Hi, John. Hi, Phil.
Istanbul.
Hi,
Istanbul.
It's 9:40 p.m.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, that's not too bad.
No longer Constantinople.
Yes, exactly. Elif has been away for 2 weeks. How has your vacation been?
It's been wonderful. I saw my... I'm with my dad right now. I just came back today from this resort area that I spend time with my family in. And I was there for about a week and a half. And now I'm basically just preparing for my return home.
Got it. Yeah, when do you fly back?
Saturday afternoon.
Okay.
And so I'll miss your Thomas Jefferson show.
Yeah, no kidding. He'll be disappointed. I know that you and he have kept company on the phone. And when we do an event like this, what's been the highlight of your trip? The resort area you were at? Was there a shopping or a restaurant experience you had? What's been the best thing of your trip so far?
The sea. Swimming in the sea.
Yeah.
The sea is clear, it's clean, and not in Istanbul, but in Bodrum, which is where I spent time with my mom's side of the family. The sea is clean and clear, and it's just, people just go there to relax.
Yeah.
So that was the highlight for me.
Did you go to the bazaar? What's that great big bazaar they have in Istanbul? I've shopped there before. It's in a bunch of concentric circles, like it's a famous shopping area. Do you know what I'm talking about, Elif?
Yes. That's called the Grand Bazaar, and it's in the Old City, in on the European side of Istanbul.
Right.
I did not go. Not this trip. I haven't gone this trip. But I've been before, and we picked up some cool jewelry there before. I think my mom has bought some of her copper furniture tables and things like that from there before.
Strikes, it feels a little touristy, but, you know, I'm a tourist, so we go there. And the merchants, when you go from one area to another, really work to literally grab you or your attention and bring you in. But it's kind of fun. Yeah.
Elif, what have you been eating out there?
Well, I just finished eating dinner, and I had my favorite food, which is, it's called lahmacun, and it's basically like a phyllo paste, not really phyllo, more of a pita bread that is covered in minced beef, peppers, and parsley. Then you put some onions that are chopped up and more parsley, and then you squeeze lemon over, and you roll it like a burrito, and you eat it like that.
Wow. Phil, do you have anything like that around here?
I don't think so.
Well, there are Turkish restaurants.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So,
but there is nothing like this.
Well, I'm going to let you go. I want you to have a safe travels and tell us more about it when you get there. But it sounds great. It's nice that you were able to call in.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'll see you soon.
This call will cost $35,000.
Actually, I don't think it costs anything, does it?
Well, no, she might have international minutes.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
But this counts as work now.
Oh, that's right. So
right.
She gets credit for today.
She gets an appearance fee. She gets all that, yeah.
An extra vacation day now as a result. Phil Vitale actually had a restaurant review in the paper today. We'll talk about that. But I just spent the first half hour of today's show complaining about the vibe at the new McDonald's that wasn't rock and roll McDonald's.
No longer rock and roll. Now
you
George Jetson. No, I haven't been there.
Yeah, you haven't been there. You probably won't go there. I mean,
Took for the looks, but it's the same food, right? Or they haven't
Same food. It might be actually a conversation for Blair Kamen. You know, architecturally, how does it fit into the city?
I suspect it will be, yes.
And then, you know, we went to breakfast the other day. I just wanted to bounce a couple places off of you. Ann Sather. Hadn't been to Ann Sather's in a while for breakfast. Had the cinnamon roll. Mm-hmm. No, I just had a couple eggs over easy, some sausage and potatoes, a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
They hustle there. I love the vibe. We were talking about the vibe of this new space-age McDonald's. Ann Sather's has a feel where there are people and there's interaction and there's some volume and there's a hustle and it's just a really nice breakfast experience.
And it probably cost you $6.
It did not cost a lot of money. And then at your recommendation, I walked over to Gibson's Italia over here, which is in that one hotel, or not hotel, but that new office building.
Right, adjacent to it. They got a four-story adjunct.
Exactly. And it's right at the confluence of the north and south branch of the Chicago River. So when you go down the Chicago River, you go past Trump Tower, past the Merchandise Mart, and then you either turn right or turn left.
Right.
Right. If you go straight, you will run into
you'll hit the dock.
This place.
And then they had a dock.
And then on the second, third, and fourth floors, they had this Gibson's Italia, which looks and feels like a nice Gibson's.
Exactly. It's Gibson's plus four pastas.
It's expensive. It feels rich, but it may be, you said it, there are items on the menu there that are not as expensive as you would see at when you're buying a $50 steak.
Right.
But it did not look inexpensive to me.
Mm-mm.
But the view from the second, third, and fourth floors.
Magnificent.
It's just terrific because you look back down the river, back
toward the lake.
Right. So that canyon of buildings on either side and the riverboats and the tour boats coming by. It's just perfect.
Yep.
It's about a night. And on the second floor, where it's the bar, and they have the full menu there on the second floor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Then the dining is on the third floor.
Right.
I talked to these people for a while because I'm thinking about going there, but I want to make sure.
Don't you just want to throw a party there as soon as you get there? I just want to bring 20 friends and just blow the budget and do this.
And on the fourth floor, somebody was. I walked into the bar lounge on the fourth floor, and somebody's setting up, and I go, oh, this is a private party. Okay. So I went back to the second floor. The second floor, they've got the bar and the dining area, and then a little patio. And the patio goes to the walkway, which is along the river. So it's very expansive and just couldn't be nicer.
No, that's where we had our launch party for the food bowl this month of activities.
Oh, yeah, the CT Food Bowl, yeah.
Right. Our, that Tuesday we had the Monday we had the launch party. And I was there, and I gave a 2-minute talk, and that was it. But then we had all these, we had some food and drink stations set up on the patio, and then later people got up to the, got to go up to the top floor, which is, as you know, covered, but open air, so
right.
You get the benefit of great weather.
Yeah.
And yeah, just hanging around there till about 9:30.
Yeah. I haven't, I didn't try the food there yet, but it's Gibson's, so
right.
That's, I think, you already have a high expectation. Talk a little bit about the CT Food Bowl.
CT Food Bowl is our month of activities.
Our Chicago Tribune.
Right. Read all about it at ctfoodbowl.com. And we have different restaurants that are doing different events. What the fun thing we did, and this is the big risk, is we went to the restaurants and said, we'd like you to do something really cool, really something that spoke to Chicago, you know, something that worked the neighborhoods in. Do that. And then we let them come up with their own ideas, rather than us try to impose something on them.
I remember earlier in the year you were soliciting ideas from the listeners.
And creatively they responded. Tonight, one of the big things tonight is there's a party on Oak Street Beach with Spiaggia chefs and just doing food. There's going to be music, and I hope to heck that the rain
weather
holds off.
Yeah,
it's a little overcast right now. Overcast is fine. No wet, thank you very much. And that's going on at 6 p.m. That's a $75 party. I don't know if it's sold out or not. Forgot to look.
Yeah.
But there are other events coming up. We've got on Friday. There's an anniversary barbecue for Lucky Door, which is one of the restaurants in Gallagher Way, adjacent to Wrigley Field. That they've been now open for a year.
It's right next to the firehouse. If you walk across the street from the firehouse on Waveland, you will walk into Lucky Door.
Right. And that's a good idea because they have, it's a fun place. And we've got, and, you know, all moving forward to the night market, which is the 24th, 25th, 26th, and that's all taking place at the Theater on the Lake.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I mean, we've been literally reading a commercial that says this much. 24th through the 26th night market, first ever. So what, is it a market where I buy, like, salami and sausage and cheese, or is it somebody's cooking food and you eat it there?
I think it's a little of both, but mostly it's eat it there, little booths. You just pay as you go.
And where is this going to take place?
At the Theater on the Lake, right there. When Fullerton, keep going, drive east on Fullerton. When your tires get wet, back up. And there you're there.
I've had breakfast there. It's brand. That's a new venue, right?
About a year old, maybe.
Yeah, and it's a great looking building. And then they've landscaped that. They've got the new paved, the white cement bicycle lane and ped way there. You know, the side, also known as a sidewalk. And they've done a real nice job with that.
Right. And these night markets actually go from 3 to 10 p.m. So you can get there, you know, a little in the afternoon, still enjoy some of the sun, and still, you know, you don't have to go when it's dark out. You can stay till it's dark out. And the admission is, actually, it's a suggested donation of
$5. $5.
And that goes off to
how do you get
people
there, though? You know, that's the thing. I mean, because we went to, I've ridden my bicycle there, but that's because I have the luxury of living not that far away,
right,
near the lake. If you drive, and I've driven there, say for brunch or lunch, there's the little circular drive, and there's a tiny parking area, but they have valet parking. And the valet parking is like $16. So when you go to brunch, figure you're going to add $16 to $20 to your bill just to get your car there. Because otherwise, how else are you going to get to that spot?
Taxi.
I guess so. But
if you value your sanity, I would either take one of the, I think there's a bus stop there, so either take public transportation or take a taxi or your preferred shared ride service.
Yeah, because, I mean, and that works for people in the city, but say you're listening to us in Joliet, or you think, oh, I want to go to that place on that theater on the lake on Fullerton. It's right on the beach. John and Phil talked about it. Sounds lovely. So they're going to drive in, right? Then they have to park somewhere nearby.
Right. Park west, walk. Take the bridge over the traffic and walk that way.
Yeah.
Or park somewhere near and just take that last little cab, the last quarter mile.
Yeah, I think that's what you have to do. You have to manage it that way.
If you value your sanity.
Or you could take the train into the city or, you know, come in that way and then, like you said, use some sort of public transportation. Or just be ready to pay the valet, but know that it's going to cost you, for the luxury of having that location, you're going to pay $15-$20 to have somebody park your car.
You know, the cab up and back is going to be $7.50.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. If the bill's $100 for a few of you to have a meal and a beverage and a time, then but now it's $115. Tell me about the place you reviewed today, Phil.
Today I wrote about a place called Lokanda, which I find historically significant because for many years there was a restaurant on Walton Street, west of Michigan Avenue, called Panicaldo, literally warm bread. And the guy who ran that place and cooked there has come back to Walton. Now he's a block or so east of Michigan Avenue, but still on Walton Street.
How far north is Walton then? What are the buildings I would recognize off of Walton?
You've just right at the Hancock. Have they changed the name yet?
Call it the Hancock.
Yeah,
Michigan and
the
Hancock.
The artist formerly known as the John Hancock building.
Yeah.
It's just a little way west of there, you know, Delaware, and then Walton Street. And it's actually in a Residence Inn by Marriott, which is no better than second last place you'd expect to find decent food. And so you walk in there and it kind of the look absolutely needs work. I mean, it's like, yay, I'm in a hotel restaurant in 1970. Bah, you know. Fire up the DeLorean, here we go.
Yeah.
But the guy can cook. The guy can flat out cook.
Really?
And yeah, really, especially his pastas. But he takes the time to make the plates look nice. The servers, there aren't many of them because this place is just getting started. They go out of their way to try to make you feel welcome and all the rest of it. They're obviously certainly glad to see you because it hasn't caught on yet. If you want a place in that Streeterville area where you can walk in, get really good food, and not have to scream at your companion to make yourself heard, you will enjoy Lokanda until it gets like super, super
Lokanda. So what am I ordering? What's on the menu?
They do a really nice pasta with squid ink with the shrimp, calamari, clams, mussels. It's basically a frutta di mare, but not like a soupy one, just the mixed seafood over pasta. The trick to all of that when you do that many different kinds of fish, seafood, and pasta is getting them all at the right texture. If you try cooking them all together, something's going to be ruined or something's going to be raw. And he's obviously like timing when what goes into the pot when, and because it all comes out really, really well. It's just a really nice burrata, you know, that Italian creamy cheese, the mozzarella ball with the creamy cheese inside it and a little bit of liquid. People serve that all the time. They give you some burrata, they give you some crackers, and you just spread it and eat it and enjoy it. He takes it, he puts it in a little puddle of gazpacho. I mean, and it's a really good gazpacho. It's always like, oh, I want more gazpacho. I mean, this cheese is great. And then the cheese goes in the middle of that, and he throws some herbs on that. He throws some fresh almonds in there. He just takes a dish that everybody just, the product sells itself. It's burrata, it's imported, it's great stuff. Instead of, here it is, here's your plate, here's your bread, enjoy. And he just turns it into, he just takes that extra time and really makes makes it worthwhile and memorable.
The name of this place is
Lokanda.
Lokanda on Walton Street, not too far from the Willis Tower. If you, is that the Willis Tower?
No, Willis Tower is back this way.
Sears Tower.
This is John Hancock. You know, name to be, you know, name for sale.
No, I think it has been sold. Is it still the John Hancock building? I'm not even sure now. I mean, you got me second guessing myself.
Maybe the Celine Dion building. Somebody can afford this is going to go in there. And
a real tall, dark building with the antennas.
With the X's, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, right, exactly. 312-981-7200. You may have a question or comment for Phil Vitale, restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. All right, so 312-981-7200 is the number to call if you want to say hi to Phil. One last thing, Phil, before we wrap this up. The CT Food Bowl series of events going on through the end of August, right? So
you've got
another couple of weeks here.
Right, and the night market kind of ends the whole thing. So the 26th of August is, you know, good night and see you next year.
Right, 24th through the 26th. And was this your idea?
Yes, it was all my idea. No, it wasn't.
I thought it was.
Our sister paper at the time, the LA Times, had a food bowl like this a year ago. And it was a huge success, and we thought, you know, we got to get in on this. And so the same group that organized that for the LA Times did it for us, and LA Times now had its second one. So their second, our first. And we'll see how it goes. The response has been, we were hoping that we'd get about 60, 70 events to get this, to legitimize the whole thing. We're over 100. So, you know, the restaurant community really, really responded. We're having fun.
Have you been running around trying to check out as many?
I've been to one. The big one is Monday. It's a restaurant summit. There are going to be panel discussions, and I'm leading one of the panel discussions, so Big Whoop, you can come see me. And then about the middle of it, then we're just doing a conversation with the critics, because Michael Phillips will be interviewing me.
Oh, nice.
So
nice.
That all takes place at the Chicago Athletic Association Hotel on South Michigan Avenue. It's all day, starts about 10 or 11, goes till about 5. And
what's the title of the topic of the panel discussion that you're going to be leading?
It's the state of restaurants. What we're looking for. What are the crucial issues facing the restaurant community today? We've got some good deep thinkers on this panel. We've got Matthias Mergis. We have Rick Bayless. We're working on a couple of others. It should be an interesting discussion.
Do you anticipate that they're absolutely going to talk about tipping or types of food or atmosphere? I mean, is there a hot topic that the...
Well, the hot topic, I believe, is going to be staffing and the so-called restaurant bubble. Do we have too many restaurants? Do we have not enough? What do we have to do to keep and attract top talent to Chicago's restaurants? And then that might very well segue to tipping and what we do about...
How do you compensate them?
How do we equitably distribute that extra service money so it's not always the one guy who gets it, maybe? And how do we keep good people? How do we reach out to good people? How do we do stuff like that? But then it could veer in all sorts of directions. I would like to see maybe we talk about some minority outreach to see if we can't attract more people to this kind of work.
Well, I guess the chef gets the owner, and then the hierarchy would be the guy that owns it is going to get the most, at least in theory. Maybe he doesn't because he's got to pay everybody, and he gets what's left. But
right.
And he's on top of the food chain. Then the head chef, the guy that designed the menu or is organizing the menu, the guy whose name is on it, he'd be top pay.
Well compensated.
Well,
if you're going to keep him around.
And if it's a good restaurant, and I don't know what good restaurant means, but is that a six-figure job, do you think?
Only at the very highest end.
Really?
Yeah.
So these really most talented Chicago chefs maybe are making $75,000 or $85,000 or $90,000, something like that.
Right. I cannot say that's absolutely true, but that sounds ballpark to me.
And then the sous chefs?
And then goes down. I don't know. It depends on...
The front of the room?
Yeah, it depends on what the sous chef has to do. Michael Simon, the guy who was on the Chew before that thing got canceled.
Yeah.
He had two, three restaurants in Cleveland, and he was doing so much out there, he said, my sous making $100,000 because I have to pay him a lot of money because he's running all my restaurants. I'm not there.
Yeah. Okay, ctfoodbowl.com to find out more. ctfoodbowl.com to find out more. Griffin, am I losing my mind here? The John Hancock Building, is that still called the John Hancock Building? Hold on.
I think so. I'm reading. There were a rash of stories about it in February.
Yeah, I think it is going to change, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
It's going to change, but I don't think they've found a new...
It's getting a new name, but for now, the building will be known as... 875 North Michigan Avenue.
Oh, that just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Well, because
how about one magnificent Walton? That one's not taken.
But is the Upshot guys, maybe Steve's paying attention to this more than I am, that the lease on the naming rights has expired.
Exactly.
Right. So they no longer...
And the insurance company has declined
to renew. So we're also going to call it the Hancock Building, and they're all going to get the free mileage.
Exactly. They'll get it for a long time. Right.
I wonder if they should call it Guaranteed Rate Building on Michigan Avenue.
It's worth a call. It's totally worth a call.
So when does the building lose its value? If it's known now as the Hancock Building, regardless of the insurance company and the money they might get, if they take another name, they're going to lose that recognition. They might lose prestige that way.
Depends on the name.
Well, but I think if you buy that building, why are you buying that, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to buy that building because you want to collect all the rent from all of those places, but mm-hmm. you also want to, just like a baseball stadium, a revenue stream will be the naming rights to that building.
Right.
Right? Like if I buy it, there's no sense in calling it John Williams Building when I can make it Phil Vitale Building,
right.
And Phil gives me $1 million.
Exactly. Yeah, so it depends on what the new name is, if whether this adds to the prestige or takes a little bit away. Somehow the changing of the name and the loss of the name makes it more of a conversation anyhow.
Yeah.
Now, if they turn it next into the Cracker Barrel building in a couple of...
I don't think they care, but I don't think they care because all they... If it's the Cracker Barrel, if it's the
I still like one magnificent Walton.
Thank you.
God bless the White
no
Sox.
No fee.
But Guaranteed Rate Stadium is not a good name for a baseball field, and I don't think the Cell was a great one either.
And you can find much worse. They'll do anything. They'll put any name on it if the price is right.
Look at the college football games, the bowl games, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it used to be the Rose Bowl. And I don't know what a dignified college football bowl game is going to be called. Mm-hmm.
There's
going to
be an Elk Grove Village Bowl next year.
Are you serious?
There's a bowl. It's not one of the top tier, but Elk Grove Village is the title sponsor. I think it's in the Bahamas or something.
Like a national game. So Kentucky's going to play Southern Cal or something.
I don't know the level of it, but it is an NCAA bowl.
The Elk Grove Village Bowl.
Elk Grove Village, said Jake. You know what's gorgeous? The Bahamas. Don't come to Elk Grove Village. Go to the Bahamas.
I'll try to find it now, but it's they're calling it the name of whatever their slogan is.
Oh, okay. Like,
Come Build Here.
Bowl, sponsored by Elk Grove Village.
Yeah, the our CEO's slush fund is stashed in the Bahamas Bowl.
No.
Wait a minute.
I think that as long... You're going to get us in trouble.
Here we go.
Go ahead, Steve.
Elk Grove Village makes history with sponsorship of Makers Wanted Bahamas Bowl. So Makers Wanted is their marketing economic slogan.
That is a bad idea.
Yep.
You know why?
Because it sounds like Maker's Mark, and
that's
I'm thinking bourbon.
That's what I'm thinking. It's a bourbon one.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I'm going to the Maker's Mark Bowl.
Look, if you're
going
to buy it, put your name on it. It's the Elk Grove Village Bowl, for crying out loud, in the Bahamas.
Well, I think it's their slogan to attract industry to the Elk Grove Village area.
Exactly.
Because of the proximity to
O'Hare. That's not the name of the bowl. The name of the bowl is the Maker's Mark Bowl, or whatever Steve just said. Phil, it's nice to see you. Thanks for coming.
My pleasure.
Read them online.
Please do.
ChicagoTribune.com/dining. Go to ctfoodbowl.com to find out about all the events that Phil's been talking about. And you can also read them in the print edition of the Chicago Tribune. Thank you, Mr. Vitale.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
One more.
Here's John Williams.
Hour to go on the stream today. Hey, it's John. This is not on WGN Radio. We've got White Sox baseball there. You want to hear the White Sox? Go there. Go to WGN Radio, that's AM 720 on your dial, and number one in your hearts, or you can listen to what we're doing on the stream. Thanks for joining us at WGNRadio.com. We are in the same Allstate Skyline studios. Actually, normally we do this show from Studio D. Today we're in Studio A, so it's a little bit of a different feel for us and view, but it's all good. Steve Bertrand's in the newsroom. Producer Griffin Filipich, I see Kevin and Violetta in their respective spots. By the way, before the break, we were just wondering, didn't they or weren't they going to change the name of the John Hancock Building? And then Griff and Steve kind of put their heads together and said that the lease on the naming rights has expired. Technically, it's no longer the Hancock Building. It's known by its address, maybe in court documents or officially, but we all know what the John Hancock Building is, that iconic building on the north end of Michigan Avenue. Which then led me to wonder, would it matter what you changed the name? Phil Vitale said, well, what if you called it the Cracker Barrel? That would take away from the value. I said, maybe, maybe not. I mean, it would still be the same beautiful building and the same beautiful location, and you take the money, right? Because Comiskey Park had a certain ring, feel, and history to it, but it's called Guaranteed Right Now, and that sort of sounds a little commercial, doesn't it?
Yeah, but
and in between it was, you know, U.S. Cellular, which isn't even a company anymore.
Well, okay, I didn't make my point well, but the name, the Hancock Building, carries with it some heft. And so I think it comes to a point where, you know, that name becomes a value, too, whether or not you're getting paid to use it. I don't know if they've been paid for a long time. I mean, the Wrigley Building. You have an office in the Wrigley Building, or I have an apartment in the Hancock Building.
Yeah, but if you were, but really, what's the value of that, Steve?
Prestige. I'm just positing it. I'm not sure I believe my own argument.
I could be persuaded, but the counter argument is what's the prestige? The location,
the name of it.
Really, I mean, because if you were going to office up in the Wrigley Building or the John Hancock, you would still be in the same building with the same view, probably with the same rent, regardless of what it was called, right?
No, I don't think I'm making my point well. It's kind of cool to say I live in the White House, right?
Yeah.
I live in the White House. You could have the same views, the same old furniture and all of that, and be called, you know, I live in the Prudential Building. It won't mean as much because you can't call it the White House anymore. See what I'm saying?
Well,
if you sell naming rights, and we might soon to the White House.
There were some of those.
So if you can, it's there's some prestige to being able to say, yeah, I live in the Hancock.
It's the recognizable name, but I don't actually know what the Hancock. Like, I call it that, but I don't actually...
You don't know why it's called that?
It's
right.
Always been the Hancock.
And
right.
The Sears Tower, it's not like I thought of the Sears company. You know, I just...
Well, that's...
It's a name to me.
I hate to say this, because we say this too much, but that has to be generational then, because Sears means the Sears department store. Hancock is the John Hancock Insurance Company,
right.
Named after the guy that signed the Declaration.
Right.
Yeah, but it becomes a point, and maybe it is age or whatever, where the name stops meaning what it's... associated with, and it
right.
Becomes identifiable with that building, right, a landmark with that building.
Yeah, well, that was your argument all along when we were negotiating whether or not we ought to change the name of Balbo, right, Steve? That's
right.
No longer associated with a racist Italian. It's Balbo.
It's associated with itself. It's become its own entity.
Yeah. And by the way, if you're Italian and Balbo wasn't racist, I apologize. So Griff then is looking up the name.
I don't think it was the racism. I think it was the fascism.
The fascism.
It was an ism.
Thank you for that. I'm not sure that we got out of jail just now, but it was fascism. And if he wasn't a fascist, we apologize.
He hung with them.
Whatever. I do not. I can find
Why
enough
Why do you
trouble.
Hate Italians?
That's exactly what I do. So what were you looking at, Griffin?
Oh, a couple lists of the worst stadium names in the country.
Okay.
Or in sports. Let me throw a couple at you.
All right.
What do you think?
I suppose Guaranteed Rate is on there because, A, it's new, and, B, it's just so utterly commercial, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's that bad, though.
Okay, fine, whatever. So what have you got on the list?
Well, maybe you disagree. I find myself disagreeing with a lot of these, but, like, in New Orleans, the Pelicans play at the Smoothie King Center.
That is a terrible name.
I like that.
Unless they draft a guy named Smoothie King.
That was my porn name, Smoothie King. All right, what else you got?
In Louisville, Kentucky, the University of Louisville men's and women's basketball teams play at the KFC Yum Center.
Yeah,
I like that one.
The Yum Center.
I mean, the Yum Center is too far, but KFC is fine.
Okay, but
plus, you want some chicken.
That's the only thing Louisville's got going for it right now.
Here's the point I want to insert about all this, though, Stephen. It's what you're saying about the heft of being at the Wrigley, the Hancock. Let's not talk about White House because that is a different entity, but if it had always been called the Yum Center, if people revered through all of these years the Cracker Barrel building, there'd be a certain heft to that.
See, yeah.
Wrigley Field. No one goes to Wrigley Field and thinks about gum.
No. No, but I mean, really, that's just...
Or the Wrigley Building.
But that's just chewing gum. I mean, what's so august about that? Nothing
right.
Except it's been there all along.
That's how I felt about the Sears Tower. It's like, Sears is just a company. It's not, you know, I mean... What do you have this real allegiance to? Is just it, as if Willis is some new corporate entity you don't know anything about. Sears is just a company too.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like they're the little scrappy upstart. Maybe that's how you feel about them now. But it was just it's all corporate anyway, right?
I think it's us pining for the way things used to be, the same way when they changed Marshall Fields.
Of course,
right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
All it is.
I mean, and I understand it, but I don't.
But Marshall Fields was actually a store. What Steve's saying
right.
Is these are landmarks. Like when you go to the Wrigley Building, when you go to the Sears Tower, when you go to the John Hancock, those are not addresses anymore. Those are landmark buildings. The Tribune Tower. We work now at 303 Wacker. It's different than saying I work in the Tribune Tower.
I totally feel like I've lost some bragging rights about my address.
Actually, Violetta, that might be the perfect point, because they're going to keep the name Tribune Tower, aren't they?
They're arguing over that.
Are they?
Well, the name Chicago Tribune is still on the side of the building, right. And the Tribune wants to take the letters off.
Well, I think they reached a settlement over
there. Did they?
Yeah. Yeah, so they're going to stay up. But there's value in that name, so they're going to keep it. It doesn't matter that the Tribune's not there anymore.
Yeah, that's a good... Okay, so maybe that... Well, let's just talk about that one building for one more second. So if you were going to buy a condo there... In that location, that beautiful building, it could be 435 North Michigan.
Lame.
Or it could be I live in the Tribune Tower.
Now that's cool.
Right. Now that's cool. But
you're going to get more money.
That's the only reason this really matters. Because
well, that's what I'm saying.
But do you think that? Do you think that you'd be able to charge more rent if it was the Tribune Tower?
I think there's a little more cachet.
What do you
it?
Think about that, Griffin?
Maybe some. You couldn't really put a price on it, but there is some value some unknown value in the prestige of the
plane. I mean, the marketing of it, we've got a shop in Tribune Tower rather than we've got a shop in the juice box that used to be Tribune Tower.
Problem is for whoever comes in after. So, like Guaranteed Rate, whoever was there before, if you still call it Comiskey, now is Guaranteed Rate losing marketing value?
Yeah.
Their name isn't out there.
Some of us are a little belligerent about that. I didn't call it the Cell. I still, now and then, when I want to sound real South Side, because I'm the world's greatest White Sox fan now, I'm such a poser, but I'll call it Comiskey. No disrespect to Guaranteed Rate. Actually, I guess a little disrespect to Guaranteed Rate, but I'll still call it that. Just because I want to sound like I've been here for a while.
I'm going to send a little message out to the fine folks at Smoothie King and tell them that the Hancock building is up.
Right. And tell them that the original Smoothie King wouldn't mind endorsing it.
I'll tell you what. You know, Steve, that point that Griffin just said makes me realize maybe you do have a point here. Because if I could office up, okay, guys, we're moving to Chicago. We're going to go to that big, tall building, the Smoothie King building, or some other building. I don't know that I would want to say I'm working in the Smoothie King building.
No, but Sears to Willis was one where I thought, and I think you just go with your instinct. If your instinct is still to truly say Sears Tower, then say it. That's fine. Everyone knows what you're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
But, like, if you're making an effort, maybe it's been long enough now where Willis comes to your mind first. That's probably how it would be for me.
I would be making an effort
to say Sears Tower, I think.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there, too. I think, again, it might be
a dying breed.
It's somewhat generational, or at least give it enough time, even for people who revered the Sears Tower and the name. In time, Willis will start to feel comfortable. It feels kind of comfortable to me now. I do understand both names. I don't seem to resent Willis as much as I did when it first came
on board. Is it close? What's your go-to, though? Your first reference is still Sears, right? I think that's our age.
Yeah.
I don't think that will ever change.
Okay, Griff, quick. That building over there, the tallest building in the city down by the train station. Which one is that?
The Willis Tower.
Now you're forcing it. So give us another stadium name that's kind of bad.
The Detroit Red Wings play at the... The Little Caesars Arena.
Pizza.
That's so funny. Keep going.
I think Pizza is Pizza Hut, so never mind on that.
No, that's Pizza is the Little Caesars.
Oh, okay, good.
The Vikings play at Mall of America Field at the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome.
Oh, yes, yeah.
You have to say the whole thing? Because they don't own the stadium, they own the field.
Right. A lot of places do that. They double dip.
Terrible.
You'll find a stadium. The field is one name, and the field is at a stadium. The stadium is a different name. Where is that, though, Griff? You said the Vikings?
Yeah.
But they play at the bank.
Oh, that's U.S. Bank. I guess, yeah, that's what it was, though. Sorry.
It was the it's U.S. It's Mall of America Field
at U.S. Bank Stadium.
Yeah. That rolls. There's a big warm fuzzy.
Or maybe U.S. Bank just kicked Mall of America out.
Yeah.
They own it all.
Do you guys know the story about U.S. Bank and what happened to the naming rights of that stadium? I'll give you the best version of it I can without my notes in front of me. But U.S. Bank buys the naming rights to the new Viking Stadium, where the Super Bowl was last year. And it's a beautiful, new, modern thing. And the stadium looks like a giant Viking ship, at least on the outside. It's pretty freaking spectacular. On the inside, it's nice, but it's, a lot of poured concrete. It's a football stadium inside. But outside, it's magnificent. And so it's the U.S. U.S. Bank Stadium. Right next to the stadium are, if not the corporate headquarters, a great big Wells Fargo building. Why do you name the stadium U.S. Bank, right? Because the announcers will say, we're here at U.S. Bank Stadium, and you get a free commercial. But also, they'll fly the blimp over it, even though it's a covered roof. You know, they'll fly the blimp over, and they'll say, we're here in Minneapolis, and you'll get the aerial shots of the stadium. So Wells Fargo next door put on its roof great big lights that spell out Wells Fargo, so that when you get the aerial shots of the city, and they always do that, you'll see Wells Fargo getting a free commercial. It's almost like the rooftops at Wrigley Field. But there will be this giant red Wells Fargo neon sign that the only way to see is if you're up high on a blimp looking down or in an airplane. So the bank, U.S. Bank, sued Wells Fargo. They said, you can't do that. This is reminiscent of Wrigley Field, isn't it? They said, you're stealing our commercial space. And Wells Fargo said, it's everybody's space. It's the air. We can put something on our roof if we want. They went back and forth and back and forth. One other mitigating factor is that when U.S. Bank paid for the naming rights, the city agreed that there would be nothing else to obstruct the view, that there would not be a competing commercial interest, or something like that. So ultimately, the judges decided that Wells Fargo had to take down the sign on their roof. They could not broadcast their name up into space. But I digress. Okay.
What do you think about where the Cavs play, Quicken Loans Arena? That one always strikes me a kind of way.
Well, but that's the problem the guaranteed rate has.
Yeah.
It just sounds very commercial and very discount. And then add to it, it's Cleveland. And you just go, okay, that's exactly what I thought about Cleveland. So some strange names for stadiums and buildings and venues. Thanks, Phil Vitale, for getting us down this road. There's a story in California today. I just want to read a little bit to you from the San Francisco Chronicle today. And this is the topic of our news click. It is the story of a horse who was mistreated and is suing its owner for $100,000. And before you dismiss that out of hand, before you say, nay, wait until you hear the story. By the way, Wendy came up with that joke. I'm stealing it. Thank you very much, Wendy.
It went over well.
So here's that story in the San Francisco Chronicle today. This is the object of our news click, too. If you go to WGNradio.com, we post a daily web poll question. Our Facebook page is very busy today, thanks to the efforts of one Violetta Podramedic, who went to the McDonald's with me, producer Griffin. We took some pictures, did some videos over there, talked a little bit about it. But then we also took pictures of, I did before I came to work today, the two suits I'm contemplating wearing for our Thomas Jefferson show. And I really don't know which one to wear. I've worn each of them before. I like the outfits. They could not look more different. The question is, which one should I wear on stage? I promise you, whichever one gets the most votes is the one I will wear. You can check it out on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, WGN King John. Did you vote, by the way, Violetta, on the ensembles?
I'm still contemplating.
You know who I'd like to know? Kevin. Who else is a good dresser around here? Pete McMurray. Dave Ennett is usually pretty dapper. Steve Cochran should vote, and I'll do whatever the opposite is that Steve said.
Bertrand?
No, Steve Cochran.
Oh.
I'll do the opposite of what Cochran says. Bertrand's a good dresser. Steve dresses like an adult every day.
Thank you, John.
I like when he wears his pink on pink pants and shirt.
Bertrand. No. I don't know that outfit per se.
I don't think I have pink pants.
Or purple. It's close. Purple.
Purple pants?
Yeah, he sometimes gets a little millennial.
So here's this story. So anyway, go to those any of those social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I'm WGN King John there, and you can vote with your mouse. This is actually in Oregon. I think I said California. It's a story in the San Francisco Chronicle. It says, Justice is an 8-year-old American quarter horse who used to be named Shadow. And when he was named Shadow, he suffered. At a veterinarian's exam last year, he was 300 pounds underweight. His black coat, lice-ridden, his skin scabbed, his genitals so frostbitten they might still require amputation. The horse had been left outside and underfed by his previous owner, who last summer pleaded guilty to criminal neglect. And now Justice the horse, who today resides with other rescued equines on a quiet wooded farm within view of Oregon's Cascade Mountains, is suing his former owner for negligence. In a lawsuit filed in his new name in a county court, the horse seeks at least $100,000 for veterinary care, as well as damages for pain and suffering to fund a trust that would stay with the horse no matter who the caretaker is. The complaint is the latest bid in a quest to get courts to recognize animals as plaintiffs, something supporters and critics alike say would be revolutionary. The few previous attempts, including a recent high-profile case over whether a monkey can own a copyright, have failed, with judges ruling in various ways that non-humans lacked legal standing to sue. The justice's case, the animal rights lawyers behind it contend, is built on court and statutes that give it a stronger chance, particularly in a state with some of the nation's most progressive animal protection laws. There have been a lot of efforts to try to get animals not only to be protected, but to have the right to go to court when those rights are violated, said Andrew Liebman, the director of the litigation at the Animal Legal Defense Fund, which filed the suit in justice's name. Those haven't found the right key to the courthouse door, and hopefully that this is the key. And we're hopeful that this is the key, he said. You know, I laugh because when we talked about this in the office before the show, I said, well, dogs and cats, horses and monkeys, parrots and fish, they're property. They're not people. They don't have rights. But when I think about that horse standing out there in the cold and suffering, I'm like, sue the bastard. $100,000, go.
Well, I think it boils, they are property, but they do have rights. It's both. And but what I think it boils down to is, do you think, it says the owner pled guilty to criminal neglect.
Yeah.
So, in my, I'm
criminal neglect of what? Yeah, that's not of a stick. Of a house,
no, but
of an animal.
He's already been prosecuted.
Yeah.
So, well, that's, why doesn't the story end there? I'm with the horse, but I don't see...
Well, this is a civil action. That's a criminal case.
Well, I know, but... So, I guess the argument is that a criminal case isn't enough. But you'd have to prove to me that the charges, like, maybe the sentence, they're not happy with the sentence, or they didn't get enough.
Or maybe they're going after money to treat the horse.
That's what it is. I mean, if you were in a civil case, say you abused me and I sued you, and you were found guilty and you went to jail, I'm like, hey, I'm still suffering here. I want to be made as whole as I can. So I had pain and suffering, which is one of the things they mentioned. Money doesn't make it go away, but it helps. And I'd also like to eat the best straw available for the rest of my life. And guess who's buying? You. Boom. All right, Griff, are you coming around?
No, I think I'm there.
I'm surprised how much I am. Not because I think people are humans, but yeah, maybe we could have it both ways.
No, horses.
People are humans. Almost all of them.
Many of them are. I know some. Some of them are friends of mine.
I know some who aren't.
Right, so, you know, people are humans. They get a chance to sue and collect. But why can't animals also, and maybe a little less? Maybe you'd give the human being $1 million.
Because it's not really the animals who are collecting, it's the animals' owners.
Yeah, but I don't, this is where the thing's going to go off the rails. The animals' owners, you know, who are going to now care for the injured horse, they're going to be driving around in a new pickup truck, and they're going to have nice vacations. You know, there's the abuse of the fund for the horse. And the horse isn't going to say, hey, wait a minute, you've got a new trailer and I in a truck and you went to the Bahamas.
Oh, it was funny that time.
I'm trying to flesh the story out, Steve. I'm trying to make it real. I'm trying to bring it to life.
So we're online. We've got very few commercials and you're still going to be late for the headlines.
If you open your windows tonight, you'll maybe hear this music.
Yeah?
What are we listening to here, Griff?
It's the score to Vertigo, the Alfred Hitchcock movie, composed by Bernard Herrmann. Some of my favorite movie music of all time. I'm very jealous that you're going to see the CSO perform this along with the movie.
At Ravinia tonight.
How cool is that?
Yeah, I'll let you know.
It's so cool. I love that music, and I love Bernard Herrmann. He's one of the great composers of all time.
You know, I totally agree.
Do you guys know what the hell you're really talking about?
I don't. He does.
I mean, because that sounds like fine... pardon me, Griff. I mean, no, literally, no disrespect, but it sounds like fine, generic, old-time movie music. But it is lovely. It was pleasant.
Yeah, maybe you'll feel it tonight.
But I can't believe that you zoned in on that, having seen it on TV or a computer all these years later.
I don't know. It's really dramatic. When you see the whole movie, I mean, that was just a minute, but when you see the whole movie, but Bernard Herrmann, his first movie that he ever composed for was Citizen Kane, and his last movie that he did the score for was Taxi Driver, and then he did a million in the middle. This is one of the greatest careers of all time. He did Psycho. That's probably the most famous.
Wow.
He did a lot of Hitchcock movies, so this one, Psycho, North by Northwest, and The Birds, and a bunch of others, but he's just one of the best.
Vertigo tonight at Ravinia. And
they've got a beautiful big screen set up. I'm jealous. I think it'd be great. Maybe I'll pop over.
Yeah, well, feel free to. I'm going to be there with Brendan and some friends, and it'll probably be raining like all hell, so it'll be good.
Yeah, you really need to work on this today, okay? I don't know, did it start, Griffin, with McDonald's, or where did this whole thing start?
I think that's my sour mood today started with our visit to the Apple store that sells hamburgers now.
I don't know, you started pretty sour before that.
Actually, I was in a bad mood before then.
Right.
And I think I know why.
I think it's... Was it because I was a little late?
Oh, no. It didn't have anything to do with you, V. Okay, don't do that to yourself.
Trust me. Those 2 minutes late. Yep, it all happened in those 2 minutes.
It literally was 30 seconds past the time we're supposed to meet, and John calls me. I'm like, oh.
And Griff looks at me and goes, hey, she's only 2 minutes late. I mean, come on, relax. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm not upset at all. I just thought I'd let her know where we were.
So I didn't answer.
Okay, so here's the deal. It is 2:39. You're listening to WGNRadio.com. WGNRadio.com. If you're a White Sox fan, want to hear the game, you can go to WGN Radio. That is the broadcast, AM 720. The White Sox are there when they are there. We don't put it on the web, so you can hear us on this stream, WGNRadio.com. And it's that way now. So if you are fans of any of the shows and they get preempted by White Sox baseball on the radio side, tell your friends and remember yourself. You can hear Rokon, Bill and Wendy, and us during White Sox games on the stream, WGNRadio.com. Quick note about WGNRadio.com. If you go there, or actually you need to go to my Facebook page. We've posted a poll today on Instagram, on Twitter, and on our Facebook. On all social media, I'm WGN King John, and there is a poll asking you, which suit do you like better for our Thomas Jefferson show on Saturday? The gray plaid or the blue with the red, white, and blue kerchief and tie? It's funny because the responses are blue-gray, blue-gray, blue-blue, gray-gray, blue-gray, blue-gray. I'll tell you what, it's just crazy out there what's happening with the suit.
Very interactive.
We
really get to be part of the show by picking your suit.
It's so true. Actually, tomorrow I'm going to ask online, what questions would you like me to ask? But we'll get there later. David Bagnell's on a phone line right now. He is the Frank Lloyd Wright Trust Curator. Now, you may have heard a little bit about this on WGN Radio. Frank, it's John Williams. You're on the air. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, John. How's it going?
It's going real well. And actually, how's it going for you? Because we've been talking about some of the things you all are doing out in Oak Park on the radio this month. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's right. It's a really busy time for us this summer here in the Chicago area. We've got a wealth of tours in Oak Park at our various sites here, the Frank Lloyd Wright Home and Studio and Unity Temple. Always worth a visit if you're in the Chicago area. And then our major project we've got going on at the moment is the restoration of Wright's Robey House in Hyde Park in Chicago. That's Wright's iconic prairie building. It's presently under restoration, but open to the public. We've just reopened several of the major rooms at the house, and it gives an opportunity for the public to see, for the first time in literally decades and decades, Wright's original vision for this house.
What was that?
He created, it really is his sort of iconic prairie house. It sort of summarizes all of the major innovations he developed up until that point in 1910. And the house was originally conceived as this sort of unified composition where every element of the design from the exterior of the building, its positioning on the site, down to the sort of furniture and fixtures of the building were all conceived as with this sort of great unity. And with the house, compromised with you know, a loss of coloration and just changes to the building over the years. Now, finally, Wright's vision for the building is beginning to reemerge. The sort of very dramatic coloration in the house. You know, the transition from exterior to interior as you walk around the building, you get to see the sort of incredible coloration of the brick and the leaded glass, and then coming to the inside of the building, that then continues now with restored original finishes to plaster and woodwork. So it really is a great opportunity to see these rooms reemerge now, having been restored.
Mm. And is it that with Frank Lloyd Wright, at least on the exterior, the idea was that the form of the building would blend into the environment? That was the idea?
That's right, but you know, his buildings that he designed in the Chicago area were referred to as prairie buildings, and they take their inspiration from the Midwest prairie. And if you think of the sort of the prairie as this flat, expansive landscape, and then you think of a house doing the same sort of thing, that's what Wright's prairie buildings really do. They are these very sort of low, expansive buildings.
Yeah, and I've always, and I get that. What I've never really been able to understand, maybe I've misunderstood, but it was his obsession with the interior, with the placement of the furniture, with the display. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
That's right. I mean, his you know, his design of the furniture for his houses and sort of that control over every aspect of the design was a central element of his work. Very early on in his career, he realized if he wanted to create these buildings as a total work of art, he needed to design every aspect. So he would create all of the furniture for his houses.
Right.
And, you know, sort of almost micromanaging the details. Like, there is nothing left to chance in the design of his buildings.
And what would he say if we said, okay, that chair works there, but to be honest with you, Frank, it's not super comfortable, and we don't like to sit in a chair like that? What would he say to that?
You know, there are stories from some of his clients of him coming back to their houses and rearranging their furniture back to the position that he'd originally conceived of it. You know, he had a very specific idea of what he wanted from his buildings, and so, yeah, there's a really strong level of control.
Yeah.
But it's... you know, the buildings in the Chicago area, Chicago and, you know, Oak Park in particular, has the greatest concentration of Wright buildings anywhere in the world. So, you know, having the opportunity to tour these buildings today, it just gives a sort of remarkable glimpse into American architectural history.
Yeah, well, and that's what we should focus on. And you just used the word art. And I suppose, tell me if this is instructive. If I had painted on a canvas and you came in and said, I like more blue in this painting, I would fret that you were going to change the color of the painting. That was my work of art. I suppose maybe that's how he felt about even the interiors of his homes, huh?
That's true. I mean, Robey House is a perfect example with these rooms that have just reopened now after restoration, that being able to see the exacting coloration and how it plays off all of the other elements of the building is something that, you know, we haven't been able to see for decades since the house was compromised. But seeing it now with just this very careful balance of color, you can really get a sense of, you know, just how much thought went into the creation of these buildings.
The Frank Lloyd Wright Trust curator is David Bagnall. So what does that mean? What is the trust? What do you all do?
So we're a Chicago-based nonprofit, and we operate and preserve a network of Wright sites in and around the Chicago area. We have 5 sites that are open to the public. They include Wright's original home and studio in Oak Park, his Unity Temple, his sort of modernist church, also in Oak Park, completed in 1908, the Rookery Building in downtown Chicago, the Robey House, of course, and then the Emil Bach House in Rogers Park. And we use these sites to tell the story of Wright's Chicago years. Chicago was where Wright began his career. It's where his ideas were forged. And so it offers a remarkable insight into the sort of the first 30 years of Wright's career.
You know, it's funny because we were just talking about architecture when we were at the new McDonald's downtown today. And Violetta said, you know, it seems to me like architecture, at least in some of these buildings downtown, is expansive and glass and, you know, it has a certain feel. And I wonder if there is any kind of a renaissance for what Frank Lloyd Wright envisioned, either in commercial buildings, retail, or residential. Where does he fit in the popular architectural culture right now?
Yeah, I mean, Wright was primarily a residential architect, and I think you know, his idea of buildings as these very flexible open spaces is still something that resonates today in the way that buildings are designed. You know, he was focused on the open floor plan, for example, and creating living spaces that were flexible spaces, as opposed to the sort of more traditional houses of his day,
yeah.
You know, with their sort of defined rooms. And I think you know, a house like the Robey House is a perfect example of right sort of forward-looking approach to architecture, that you have these great expansive rooms, they're lined with glass, and you know, I think those are elements that you still see playing out today.
Well, you go to a lot of people's houses now and they have the great room, the kitchen that folds into a living dining space, so that's a little bit of Wright's culture there, huh?
Yeah, it still affects the way that we live today.
Hmm. Okay, so what can we do for you besides tell people to check this out? Do you guys exist on private funds? Do you have tax support? How do you guys exist?
We, you know, thrive off the money that we gain from tours of our sites. It's incredibly important to you know, keep these sites alive, and we couldn't do it without the support of the public who comes to visit our sites. And we do also you know, work with private foundations to help support projects like the restoration of the Robey House.
Yeah. What's the website for you guys?
It's flwright.org, and you can find out all about our tour offerings and public programs on the website. We also do a lot with Chicago Public Schools and schools in the Chicago area. We have a very active education department, and people can come experience our programs at our sites and in and around Chicago.
Well done, David. That's flwright.org, obviously with a W, F-L-W-R-I-G-H-T, flwright.org. Find out more there and check out what they're doing at the Robey House, because new rooms or more space is available for public view. Is that right, David?
That's right. It's, you know, the existing rooms, but they've been restored to Wright's original vision for the house. So it's a great time to come and see what's going on in Hyde Park at the Robey House.
Nice to talk to you, David. Let's visit again. I'll come out and see you guys. I've heard a little bit about this. Obviously, this interview has really piqued my interest. I'll be out there sometime soon.
Well, great. It'll be good to see you out here.
David Bagnell, Frank Lloyd Wright Trust Curator. It's 2:50. There we go. All right, more of this. I got it.
Suspense. Drama. Fraser Thomas presents Vertigo.
Is this from Vertigo?
Yes, this is the opening credits.
You want me to shut up because this is great music and I'm ruining it right now?
That's it's your show.
No, it's okay. Go ahead and crank it a little bit and I'll get out of the way.
That frightened me.
I know. It's working on both levels. It's perfect.
It's kind of ironic.
So this is the musical score that they'll be performing live at the Ravinia tonight. It's Vertigo. And when Griff heard that we were going to go see a live orchestral performance by the CSO, I guess it is, of the score to the movie, as the movie plays on the screen, he was instantly jealous because he's a big fan of the movie and particularly of that score.
Yeah, it's not my favorite Hitchcock movie. But it's by far my favorite music of almost any movie. I love it.
That's so bizarre. I mean,
I think when you see it with the orchestra, you'll get it.
I hope I do, but you haven't. So I still think it's exceptional / peculiar that you've locked in on that, and that like, what's your favorite lyrics in that song? What's your favorite, you know, like, when you think of movies whose music you really like, sometimes it's a song that goes with the movie. Or, I don't know, did you like the music from La La Land? Did you like that, that song?
Yeah.
I thought that was terrific.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that's more
accessible.
That was accessible to me. I could hum along to that. There was some dancing.
I think you'll come out of this humming.
Okay.
Humming the Vertigo music tomorrow on the show.
I'm looking at WGNradio.com for our news click. Rokan just strolled into the studio, too. Hi, Rokan. Which one are you on over there? You going to pick up six?
Yes, I'm going to pick up six.
Yeah, how are you, man?
I'm good.
Hold on a second. So if you go to the news click at WGNradio.com, horse lawsuit, a malnourished horse in California is suing its owner for neglect. And then it says,
oh, Wilbur.
It says literally, seriously, humans are helping. Should animals be able to go after the owners this way? I'll cast your vote, Ro. Should a court recognize a horse as a plaintiff?
No.
Okay, I'll vote no.
All right, turn off the poll.
would you like further? I've spoken, and I don't think that that should be the case.
33% are saying yes. 67% are saying no right now.
Well, you could sue somebody. I mean, three people are in the poll. You could.
The horse really suffered, Ro.
I don't doubt it, but there are laws. There's animal cruelty laws. There's all kinds of things.
Well, this guy was charged criminally and pled guilty, but that doesn't compensate the horse for pain and suffering.
Well, how's the horse going to get compensated? Is the horse going to move to Bimini? What is the horse going to go do with that?
The horse is now. Okay, fine. I won't take it seriously either. I started to write like a response, like this is nothing to. Let's see if I've got a bunch of puns written in a sort of
okay.
a paragraph.
I'm
here.
Ready. I'm ready.
I think it was just the one pun.
Well, no, but there's others, Griff. If you say like, okay, Ro just voted nay, but. Nay.
See, that's the one I remember. I'm waiting on another one.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Say, hey. Why did I come in early?
You could say, hey.
Right. But there's nothing. Oh, there's an expression about straw. Well, this is just a straw poll.
Oh.
Mind you, this is a straw poll.
I see what you did, yeah.
There's two. And I could go on like this if you want me to.
No. No, that's okay.
That's why Ro came running down the hall.
He's my God, stop him! Stop! Stop him on the stream! Stop the stream! The White Sox, though, it appears that game is over, right? It's just ending right now. So
how'd we do?
I think we won.
All right!
Yeah.
Go White Sox!
Yeah.
And the Cubs are the Cubs playing? Did I see the Cubs up too?
I believe they are. So we'll be on the actual radio here in about 20 minutes.
Well, don't screw up.
Yeah. We try not to. We have a lot going on in the program.
What are you doing today?
We got Lourdes Duarte is going to be joining us. Day two of the Hedia Pendleton murder trial.
No.
And also, this is interesting. You know, she... Lourdes did that story about this guy who was in county jail for 10 years awaiting trial.
I don't know this story.
Yeah. And it was the longest at that point at Cook County that was awaiting. And so it got national attention.
Yeah.
And so there has been a resolution in that case, and she'll tell us what it is. And there's another special coming up about that because that's pretty interesting. Mr. Skilling still shaking off his 40th.
He's kind of hungover, is he?
I think he's high on cake. I don't know what he does.
I don't know what a hungover Tom Skilling is like. It would seem to me like... does Tom imbibe? Does he drink alcohol?
I don't know. I think so. Yes, I believe so. I was trying to think... You know who would know the answer to that is Violetta. We were at... Tom and Violetta have run off together. I don't know if people know
I
that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. They did that store that big party, Channel 9 party at your parents' restaurant. Was
mm-hmm.
Was he
having a soda pop or what was he pulling down?
He forgot his sport coat there. So.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe that's all we need to know.
He called the next day and left actually a voicemail. He's like, "Hey, this is Tom Skilling calling, and I might have left a sport coat there."
Say it again.
Did you check the pockets? I mean,
no, he would never invade any customer's privacy like that.
Oh, because I would imagine he's got like that Mr. Moneybags thing going, right with the
roll of hundreds.
Yeah. $10,000.
When Tom's not on the air, he has a monocle. and he actually wears tails when he goes to places. It's like a whole thing.
But no kidding. If I was thinking of Tom Skilling, who's, you know, we've all talked about him a lot this week, but I think, okay, if you said he's at a bar, what's he drinking? I don't think he's drinking a Falstaff.
I think a Rob Roy.
I don't think probably a cocktail.
Yeah.
We got to ask him that, because I bet that would be hard to think about. I can't see him with a martini or anything like that.
Yeah,
or a beer.
Right.
Or a Bud.
Not a craft beer, not a Bud. Maybe a martini, but maybe not a strong one.
Like, I would say a martini on the rocks would
really?
Be my guess,
like
yeah.
Or a
gin and tonic kind of thing.
Or maybe an old-fashioned.
An old-fashioned,
something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. I mean, you get to a certain age,
maybe
and you just have one of those, and it's night-night, right?
Let's do this for Anna DeBlantis.
Okay.
What would be her go-to cocktail?
It used to be bourbon and Coke, but I really haven't had bourbon in a long time. So now it's more of like a Sauvignon Blanc or a Pinot Noir, a glass of, you know, just wine.
No, you don't want to be too predictable. Like the ladies all have white wine or rosé all day.
Rosé all day in the summer.
Yeah.
And then Violetta taught us a new drink, which I just tried again, with the rosé in the blender with the strawberries, and it's delicious.
Wow. Mm. Kind of like a daiquiri?
Sort of, yeah. Yeah, we learned that I actually have a blender at my house based on that experiment. We found that out.
That's why I thought she went through Skilling's pockets, because she went through absolutely everything in your house.
That's
why
true.
Wouldn't she?
That's true.
Well, all right, boys and girls, I'm out of the way. You guys are on. Are you ready to do the transition into the newsroom?
Yes, we are. And we should also mention that for people listening on the web, that Dave Navarro from Jane's Addiction and also from Red Hot Chili Peppers, people will remember him from that, one of the great guitarists and just rock stars of his generation.
Oh, you just Dave Navarro, done.
You know,
no more descriptors needed.
Yeah. And he's going to be with us in the 4 o'clock hour as well, so stay tuned for all of that. And I believe we got some Billy Joel tickets to give away, too.
Yeah, I don't have Billy Joel tickets to give away.
Yeah, no. You know, I'll tell you something right now. It's a big deal.
Kind of a big deal.
Kind of a big deal to get Billy Joel tickets. Anyway, I think I just hurt myself.